This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Does the U.S. stand to benefit from Japan's territorial dispute with China?
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with a global perspective on business and economics. Tensions are on the rise this week between China and Japan after Chinese naval ships confronted some Japanese fishing boats that were in the waters surrounding those disputed islands in the East China Sea. It may sound like a far-off squabble, but it is still having an economic impact that can be felt right here in the U.S. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes joins us from Tokyo with the details. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, this tension has had huge economic consequences. Give us a sense of what it's done on both sides in Japan and China.
So we've seen massive drop-offs in trade between Japan and China. Initially, back in the fall of last year, we saw huge drops in the sale of Japanese cars, for example, to China, which is a big market for Japanese companies. Falls of around two-thirds for companies like Toyota. And those sales simply have not come back. It was expected that by now we would see the sales gradually coming back again. And they have a bit, but they have not returned to anything like their former level. We've seen a drop-off in Chinese tourists coming to Japan. That's affecting retails. It's sellers here in Tokyo who depend on a lot of Chinese custom. So it really has had a profound impact on Japan.
Didn't Prime Minister Abe, when he came to power, want to improve the relationship?
He did, and I think he would like to, but not at the cost of Japanese territorial integrity or national dignity. And he has, at the same time, also said that Japan should look elsewhere, Japanese companies should look elsewhere for markets and for places to invest. And we have started to see that. Toyota has just announced that it is going to build a new model of its Lexus luxury line in the United States. And that investment is in part because Toyota is not going to invest more in China at the moment. So, you know, it's going to invest instead in a market where Japanese products and Japanese companies are welcome.
The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes joining us from Tokyo. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, the tobacco company Lorillard will report its earnings this morning, which will give us a glimpse at how big tobacco is faring as cigarette use drops. Sally Herships reports.
Okay. First of all, the product big tobacco sells is addictive. So even while the market for cigarettes is declining by 3-4% a year, customers keep coming back. But tobacco companies are thinking long term and investing in new products.
Did you say it was called Snus?
Snus, S-N-U-S.
Tom Malarkey is a senior equity analyst with Morningstar. And Snus is kind of like chewing tobacco, except it comes in a pouch and there's no spitting.
It's very big in Sweden.
Sales of snus in the U.S. are around $500 million a year and growing. That's according to Matthew Hudak, an analyst with Euromonitor International. But Hudak says e-cigarette sales are growing even faster.
So this is the future of how the tobacco companies are going to make their money.
That's what a lot of tobacco companies are already betting on.
Hudak says sales of e-cigarettes have been doubling for the past few years. In the meantime, Tom Malarkey says government restrictions make it difficult for new companies to sell tobacco, and a lack of competition means prices and sales are expected to stay high. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are higher in global trading this morning, up 1.7% in Hong Kong, 0.5% higher right now in Frankfurt. Apple shares are basically flat in pre-market trading this morning after the company came out and beat expectations with its earnings report yesterday. On Wall Street, the Dow added 152 points to close at 14,719.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
There is a word that gets thrown around a lot right now in Washington, on Wall Street, and all around the country. A word that can mean different things to different people. The word is welfare. From the Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk, Chrissy Clark has a definition.
Once upon a time, the word welfare simply meant faring well, like in the U.S. Constitution.
We the people.
Put to music here, courtesy of that old TV show, Schoolhouse Rock. Right after that line about forming a more perfect union, there's a charge to promote the general welfare and... And yet, if you go out and ask people how they feel about the word welfare today...
Negative.
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 Negatively.
It's full of paradox that a word that means well-being came to refer to one of the most stigmatized programs.
That's historian Linda Gordon. She says the word welfare hit a turning point during the Depression when Congress created a program that gave cash assistance to poor single women with kids. It was called Aid to Dependent Children, but it got a nickname.
Welfare, because it was a program maintaining the welfare of children.
At first, welfare wasn't all that controversial, but suspicions quickly set in, partly because of some pretty subjective tests to judge which women deserved help. Gordon says social workers would do home inspections.
And if they saw a bottle of beer, that automatically made a woman unfit. If they saw what they considered a luxury item, like a bottle of perfume.
Another issue, welfare capped income in a way that could discourage people from having above-the-board jobs. And yet, while all those rules affect our stereotypes about welfare today, the program has actually changed. Luke Schaefer teaches social work at the University of Michigan. He says in the 1990s, welfare became welfare to work, with new rules to incentivize employment. Now, the program costs less and serves fewer families.
So there's actually more active postage stamp collectors in the United States than there are cash assistance recipients.
One more twist. Cash assistance isn't always what welfare refers to. Things from food stamps to Medicaid can get lumped in as well. Meaning, if you're in a debate over welfare spending, make sure everyone's on the same page of the dictionary. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
So what does the word welfare mean to you? You can go to our website, marketplace.org, right now and let us know. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.